You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll find out about a new college program helping undecided students settle on a major and still stay on track to graduate in 4 years. First, Judith Sears-Poisson joins me in the studio for our spring membership drive here at WPR. Your gift right now is super important. It's because gifts from people like you are the largest source of funding for WPR programs. Your gift keeps this program and all your other favorites going strong. So invest in your future listening right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And last hour, we heard from 13 new and returning members. Thank you so much for those gifts. Right now, we have a dollar-for-dollar match up to $2,000. This generous match is from current members, including Gene and Mark Ledman from West Salem, and it means that they'll match every dollar you give.
It's their way of encouraging you, of daring you to support them, to join them in supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Double your support for the programs you love. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, a large slice of funding for WPR programs, in fact, the biggest slice, is listener support. So while all of our funding sources, the state and federal governments and businesses, are important, of course, your contribution makes a huge difference. WPR is the amazing and varied service that it is, thanks to you. So keep independent, high-quality programs on the air when you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The programs you hear on WPR make a difference in your life. That's why you're listening right now and why you listen maybe every day. During this spring membership drive, we're asking you to support your radio home.
Listeners who value public radio give what they can to support it. That's how the model works. If you're already a member, thank you so much for making Wisconsin Public Radio possible. If you're not a member yet, today's the day to become one. Make your first ever gift. Maybe it's $100, maybe it's $10 a month. Give the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We have that dollar-for-dollar match in effect. You can help us meet that match with your gift. And when you pledge, you're entered into a drawing for one of five $500 grocery store gift certificates.
It's
so
great.
Nice little added reason to pledge. But of course, the main reason you pledge is because you appreciate the programming that you count on every day from Wisconsin Public Radio. And you know, you understand that we count on you to help pay for it. Make that gift right now. It really makes a difference at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
When you support WPR, you're supporting a really unique concept that is here in the Badger State. That is the Wisconsin idea. And that idea is to spread the resources of the university across the entire state. Not every state has such an idea. And not every state has the high-quality programs you enjoy daily on WPR.
WPR is one of the great things about Wisconsin. It's something to take pride in. Join forces with many other Wisconsinites right now and make your contribution at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Supporting WPR right now is a great thing to do with just a couple minutes of your time. All we need is your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay for it.
It's pretty easy. And here's the great thing. Once you make that pledge, every time you listen, you'll know, hey, I help make this. I help pay for the radio content I'm appreciating right now. This conversation, I help make that happen. You can tell other people, hey, I did that. Take pride in it. Take some credit.
Me, no, because
you do deserve credit for it.
It's true.
Make that gift and feel great about it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have that great dollar-for-dollar match still in effect. There's still room for your gift to be matched. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And your support of WPR goes twice as far.
We heard from Dan in Ashland. Dan says, I love the program subjects. I tune in every chance I get, and almost always there's something that sounds interesting. Central Time is one of my favorites. Rob Ferret. Hey, that's me. Rob Ferret seems so connected with the guests. Thank you. That's very, very kind of you to say that, Dan. And I love that you're listening, and I love that you gave. How about you? Join Dan with your pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It's the first day of our spring membership drive. Get us off to a great, strong start. And this hour only, get your gift matched with that generous challenge match from current members who include Gene and Mark Ledman from West Salem. Do it now. It's a great time to make your gift in support of Central Time, in support of the Ideas Network, and in support of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Getting an undergraduate degree is normally thought of as a four-year affair. But in Wisconsin, it takes on average 4.5 years for college students to graduate. For students who start school without deciding on an official major, spending extra time and tuition money can become more likely. A new program at Mount Mary University in Milwaukee is helping freshmen figure out which major might be right for them while staying on track to graduate in that 4 years. It's called the Compass Program, and it officially kicks off later this month. Wendy Weaver is the Dean of Humanities, Social Sciences, and Interdisciplinary Studies at Mount Mary University. Wendy, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, tell us about the Compass Program. Why did you all at Mount Mary decide you needed this effort to help undeclared students?
Well, for several reasons. First of all, it is the most popular major in the nation, and there are quite a few students who are undecided or undeclared, and so that's why we did it.
And I understand that, and it makes sense, if people are kind of fumbling around trying to figure out their major the first year or two, maybe that makes that four-year deadline for graduation not happen. It makes them stay in college longer.
That's true. That can happen, but we want to prevent them from fumbling around. And I'd first like to say that the undecided student, the undeclared student, isn't necessarily someone with no interest or has no idea. Usually they have multiple ideas that they're excited about, a lot of things, maybe every class they take, perhaps. And so it's that decision-making and discerning process. And some majors are very sequence-oriented, where if you don't start early, you wouldn't finish in the 4 years. So we want to get a jump start on that decision-making process with them.
So how are you doing that? If I'm a Compass student coming in, what do I get?
Well, the first thing you get, this sounds like a game show. The first thing you get is a 3-day jump start. We have you come in early, and we work together as a cohort of students and career specialists and faculty to do discernment activities, to do assessments, and also fun activities together, and to see what's possible when you're doing like problem solving and gaming together. You learn about yourself.
Yeah, do a lot of students coming out of high school, you said they're excited about a lot of different things, but I know they may have no idea what kind of career they want to pursue. Is that what you start to help get them rolling on?
Yes, to link their interests with what may become a vocation or a calling. And we have the jump start, and then they move into the first semester where they're taking a career exploration class and also classes directed at possible meta majors or general areas to get their feet wet in areas that they're interested in to see if that's really where they want to go. And then also a follow-up the second semester with another, just a one credit. We have lots of outside activities as well for them, again, to get their feet wet in certain areas so that they can make a good decision.
Yeah, talk about those meta majors. What kind of clusters or clumps of majors might be put together into one of those?
Well, a lot of them cross over, but I would say there's some that are geared towards the sciences, some towards art and design, some towards liberal arts. Those are large areas, but there are even smaller directions within each of them. For example, in the sciences, might it be natural sciences? Might it be health sciences? And within the health sciences, you get narrower and narrower and narrower from there.
And I imagine if I'm doing this, I'm still taking some of my basic requirements in that first year, right?
Absolutely. It's a cohort model. So they'll be in classes progressing towards a degree the entire time. Yes.
How have students responded to this so far?
They've been excited. It hasn't started yet, but some students are already identifying as the Compass Year, even though it hasn't been rolled out. They're
right.
Undeclared, and they're already wanting to be a part of it because we've had pieces of this in place all along, which is why it's such a good fit for Mount Mary.
Yeah, are you reaching out to high school students who are maybe incoming now to
yes.
The seniors who are coming in next year?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So what are the goals? Once you get this in place, what are your hopes for the Compass program?
Our hopes are that the students find where they really fit, that they find their calling, so to speak. I know that that's loaded language, but we want them to find fulfillment in the workplace as well as marketable skills for the workplace. And so that's what we hope for every student.
Where did the idea for this come from? Because as I understand it, this is the first of its kind in the Midwest. Do I have that right?
Well, that's where it's the first one that we know of. We were doing a lot of research, and a lot of different places have pieces of this, but they don't have all of the best practices all circled together, pooled together into one program. And the idea came from our new president. This is her second year in office. President Christine Farr, she brought it to us. And then we had a task force work on it for a year, and here we are.
Now, there might be out there listening, freshman college students or seniors getting ready to go to college or their parents. Maybe they're not at Mount Mary, but they're thinking, yeah, this is me. I'm undeclared. I'm confused, and I'm really worried about the fact that I don't know what I want to do. What would you say to them?
I would say this is a very natural fear. I think that's one of the stigmas we're trying to destigmatize. It's, well, when you first come to college, you're meeting dozens of people every day, and the first two questions you're asked are, what's your name and what's your major? And if you don't have an answer to that second question, you just feel like you don't have a way to connect to other people. Like if you were, oh, I'm a biology major. Oh, me too. I wonder if we have a class together. There isn't that kind of sense of belonging that's very important to student success.
We'll leave it there for now, Wendy. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Wendy Weaver is the Dean of Humanities, Social Sciences, and Interdisciplinary Studies at Mount Mary University in Milwaukee. She was with us to talk about the school's new Compass program, which helps freshman students undecided on a major figure out what they want to do. Coming up, we'll hear from a Wisconsin woman using her sewing skills and compassion to make dolls for children nationwide who don't usually see themselves in the dolls on the market. That's coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Our next guest has always liked dolls. When she no longer played with them herself, she began sewing them. Today, she's still sewing dolls, but it's now taken on a whole new meaning. She's making them for children who don't see their physical appearances in the other dolls out there. Amy Jandrusovitz is a former pediatric oncology social worker. She handmakes dolls for children with physical differences that we don't usually see portrayed in toy stores. Her work is called A Doll Like Me Creations. Amy, thanks a lot for coming up to the studio.
Sure, thank you.
Well, tell us about your own story. You grew up loving dolls and then you ended up making them.
Yes. So I played with dolls probably until it was socially not appropriate anymore. and this was just a natural way to keep doing it. I've sewn dolls for as long as I can remember, but in this capacity, it's been about 4 years.
Right. Talk about how you got a request for a very specific doll that got you started on this path.
So social media is kind of remarkable in this way. It's kind of one of those friend of a friend stories. And so a friend of a friend knew that I could make dolls, and she had a little girl who had her leg amputated. And so she wondered if I could do a doll for her little girl. And I did, because that's a really easy thing to do. And I had never thought of it before. And so I did a quick search on the internet to see what was available. And the images that you see typically of kids with differences are not only humiliating, but they're really demeaning. And so I realized this was a really underserved group of kids. And so within 2 months, I had 200 doll orders.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can't keep up with that much. That's a lot.
Right. I've never actually, yes, I've never been on top of it. That's correct.
Now talk about what it's like when you see a kid for the first time have a doll. Is maybe mind-blowing that yeah. looks like them.
So the funny thing, so out of all the dolls I've ever made, I actually have never seen a child in person get mm-hmm. one. So I really, really like pictures, and videos are... I mean, it's kind of like being a fly on the wall. Uh-huh. And some of those videos, in fact, there was one just the other day of a mom opening a doll of her son that died of cancer. And it broke me. It really, like, people ask, how do you not get attached? I don't know, because I do get attached. And watching that was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was really... I have so much humility, mm-hmm. I think, when I see that. So I love those videos.
Can you talk about some of the different designs of dolls you've done for kids with different appearances?
So initially, those 200 orders were just for kids with limb differences, limb or hand differences. Because you look at your 10 fingers and you realize there are a million permutations of a hand. So it went very quickly into... I've never seen a doll. Could you do X, Y, or Z? And so the next request was Chinese albinism. So I think if there's some type of a difference, I've probably at this point seen it or heard about it. Just because dolls don't look like the ones, or kids, I'm sorry, kids don't look like what you see on the store shelves.
Right. And I think for people whose kids do have dolls that look like them, they might not even think about this. I never thought about this, honestly.
Right.
Why is it important for kids to see toys, dolls, representation that looks like them?
So, I mean, let me just quickly tell you an interesting story. My little girl is 3, and after watching a Disney Princess movie, the first thing she said was, I wish I had blonde hair and blue eyes. And if you see her, she actually does. And so it shows you how early kids internalize this standard of what they should look like. And so you look at, for example, a child of color, or you look at a child with some type of a difference, or maybe even both, and you realize that they will never see themselves on a store shelf. And that's so important. Representation is, I think that dolls can do things that we never even imagine.
Speaking of the videos, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has one up of, I think it was a 14-year-old girl. She had a hand that looked different.
Yes.
There's an unboxing video, I think they
yes.
call them, online. And a very short video. I recommend people go track that down because it's very powerful.
Oh, truly. And you know, that it happened, first of all, and second, that somebody caught it on tape. It's a very... visible. If somebody says why are dolls important, I would tell you, you've got to watch that video.
Absolutely.
That's a snapshot of why.
There might be people out there, Amy, thinking, this is awesome. How can I help? Can they help? What can they do?
Sure. So, gosh, there's a million ways that they can. I think that we all crave to do something to help other people. This is a really tangible way to help kids. And so I do have a GoFundMe because in my mind, none of these families should have to pay for a doll like this. It should be a gift on behalf of our community that we say, look, we've done you a disservice. We really do support you, no matter what you might think or what people, you know, might say to you. We really do support you, and you have a place at the table too. So I would love for this to ideally be a gift to all kids. So that's why I started a GoFundMe. Sometimes crafters will ask if they can make a quilt for the dolls or clothes. So I'm totally open. There's actually a Cub Scout group right now sponsoring a doll. They're going to sell cookies to buy one. So there's a lot of things we can do.
Okay, out there listening, I know we have toy companies in Wisconsin. We have artists, we have designers, we have illustrators. What would you say to them, so it isn't just a volunteer effort here, to say to them to reflect the people out there of different
yes.
races, with different disabilities and physical appearances?
So that's I'm really glad you brought that up, because I think that's the second part of these dolls, is they're front and center because we're ready for a different narrative. And the narrative needs to be, look, we're going to represent all kids, the kids that are on commercials, the kids that are in movies, the kids that you see on the toy shelves, the kids that you read about. That needs to be the narrative. And I think that that's, we're at the point where we're hungry for a different narrative.
Amy, thanks for the work you're doing, and thanks so much for coming up to the studio today.
Sure, thank you.
That's Amy Jendrisovich. She's a former pediatric oncology social worker. She handmakes dolls for children with physical differences that aren't usually reflected in commercial dolls. Her work is called A Doll Like Me Creations. We're going to have a story from our web team up pretty soon at WPR.org. We'll have some pictures up there as well. You can check that out. Right now, it's the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Judith Sears-Poisson is in the studio with me to ask for your support for Wisconsin Public Radio. Judith, we have this challenge going.
Yes.
We're at $1,000 toward our goal of, what was that again?
$2,000, and that's a very generous dollar-for-dollar match from current WPR members that include Gene and Mark Ledman from West Salem. So your gift of $50 turns into $100, $100 turns into $200, and so on. So take advantage of this match and double your support for Wisconsin Public Radio programs when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Why do you pledge? You just heard it. We try to bring you people who are doing interesting, cool, awesome, life-changing stuff around the state of Wisconsin. This is what we are really shooting for each day on Central Time. We can't do it, though, without you, without your financial support. Make that gift right now. Get it matched at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What you said is so true, Rob. You can count on Central Time, not just for the news and politics of the day. Those are important, of course, but stories about our neighbors and fellow Wisconsinites really making the world better for the people around them.
We can't do it without you. Support this great programming, these great conversations, these great introductions to people around the state. Who knows what your neighbors are doing? It might be really interesting, and we are going to try to bring that to you. Make your gift. We have this dollar-for-dollar match in effect. Thank you. Another pledge just showed up. Thanks so much for that. How about you? Make your very important gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
If you've just recently discovered Wisconsin Public Radio, we want you to know that WPR is listener-driven, not profit-driven. You get more programming per hour because we don't have to take time out for long blocks of commercials, and we work to produce programs that serve you.
Make your gift right now. Any amount, you get to choose the amount you want to give. We're still looking. We're a little over halfway now to hitting that dollar for dollar match this hour. Get your pledge doubled. Support great conversations each and every day here on Central Time. Make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in his new state budget, Governor Evers is targeting the Republican-backed labor law commonly called Right to Work. An expert on labor politics looks at the nationwide back and forth over union laws. First, Judith Sears-Poisson joins me in the studio for the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Your gift makes a huge difference because listeners are the single largest source of funding for all of our programming here at Wisconsin Public Radio. Step up. Make your donation right now. Become a supporter. Become a member of Wisconsin Public Radio with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have great news to share. We have met our dollar-for-dollar match that was up to $2,000. Thank you so much to all of you who gave. Thank you also to the current members, including Gene and Mark Ledman from West Salem, who gave that challenge amount. They wanted to inspire you to support Wisconsin Public Radio, and clearly they did. We are still looking to get five more pledges this hour to meet our number goal. So join us now. It's a great time to do it. First day of the drive. Get us off to a really strong start. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network is all about connections. You connect with news and information from around Wisconsin. You connect with guests and other listeners near and far.
And these connections can happen because members step up to fund them. The Ideas Network is listener-supported radio. That's where you come in. Make everything you value on the Ideas Network possible when you give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. 888-202-2552.
It's easy to spend a buck or more a day on things that are part of your routine, like the cup of coffee, the snack from the vending machine.
Consider the news, information, and inspiration from Wisconsin and around the world that you get every day from listening to WPR. Maybe a dollar a day, that's about $30 a month, is just the right donation for you. Sign up right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 and support the programs you enjoy every day.
There are so many good reasons to give to Wisconsin Public Radio. In this drive, one of them is that your donation of any amount gets you entered in a drawing for a $500 gift card to a grocery store near you. You'll have five chances to win. We hope you'll donate to enter, but you don't have to donate to win. You can send in a postcard with your name, address, email, and phone to WPR Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. Sustainers, we've got you covered. You're automatically entered. Check out the rules and details at WPR.org/drawing. Your donation of any amount right now gets you entered. Here's how to give.
Go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs you count on. Rob Ferret here with Judith Sears-Poisson. Your support today of Wisconsin Public Radio keeps all your favorite programs going strong. Whether your contribution is $5 a month or $10 or $100 a month, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And we are looking for five more gifts by 5 o'clock. You can be one of those right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Show us how much you appreciate Central Time, all of the Ideas Network programming when you give. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And hey, we can throw a t-shirt at you. I mean, not literally throw
well,
it
we
at
could
you.
If
metaphorically,
we really wanted to.
Yeah. For extra, if you pledge extra. But if you pledge $10 a month, we will politely send you, if you ask for it, the brand new design of the Wisconsin Public Radio t-shirt. $10 a month or $120 total. You've got the specs there, I guess you'd
I
call
do have
it,
the
Judith,
specs
in a
here.
Picture, so, a representation.
It's a heather maroon shirt, which I like. It's a very different color. It's going to stand out in a crowd, and it features a salmon-colored design, and it shows WPR signals across three different Wisconsin landscapes, an outdoor scene, a farm scene, and a city scene. It's 50-50 cotton poly. It's very comfortable, made in the USA, printed right here in the Badger State. It can be yours with your gift of $10 a month or $120. Make that gift now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I was pulling for taupe and chartreuse. I don't know what either of those colors
yeah,
are.
Yeah, they do
it
not go together.
Good,
no,
yeah,
no,
it probably
no,
would
no.
for me. I don't know. But you can claim the actual color of the t-shirt with your gift right now, $10 a month or more. It's an added gift. It's a way to show your appreciation of Wisconsin Public Radio. But the main reason you give is because you count on the conversations we bring you every day here on the Ideas Network. And you understand that we count on you to help pay for it. Make that very important, powerful, meaningful gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Another added bonus for supporting the programs you love is that your donation enters you in a drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, you have five chances to win. That's a lot of snacks. That's a lot of staples. That's a lot of whatever you pick up at the grocery store. Give now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to be entered in that drawing. And guess what? Sustainers, those of you making ongoing monthly gifts are automatically entered.
Looking for three more gifts now by the end of the hour. You can get us there if you make your gift right now. Pledge online. It takes just a few minutes at WPR.org or give us a quick call, 888-202-2552. And thanks so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. In a meeting with union members last week, Governor Evers announced proposed changes to the state's labor laws. Those would include rolling back Wisconsin's right-to-work law and reinstating the prevailing wage law.
We're going to begin to undo the harm that has been done to organized labor.
Wisconsin is one of 26 states, including neighboring Iowa and Michigan, that have right-to-work laws on the books. Evers' proposal puts him in line with what seems to be a small but growing move to restore previous pro-union rules. Our next guest is here to talk about the changing labor landscape and what the future could hold for unions nationwide. Merrick Masters is director of labor at Wayne, State University, where he's a professor of business and adjunct professor of political science. Merrick, welcome back to Central Time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Before we dig into particular policies, have you seen tides moving back and forth when it comes to union laws? Have they been all moving in one direction? Are you seeing pushback? What's the big picture?
Well, I think for the past several years, they've been moving in an anti-union direction right after the Tea Party sweep of the 2010 midterm elections. You saw a wave of anti-union legislation led by Wisconsin, Ohio, and Michigan take effect. But after the 2018 elections, I think we've seen a change. The Democrats retook control of Congress. They picked up several gubernatorial seats, including seats in Michigan and in Wisconsin. Although they didn't capture the legislatures in those states, they did gain some seats. And I think nationally, the picture is more favorable to labor than it has been in quite some time. So I think that these issues are highly discussable, although it'll be difficult to get any pro-union legislation through legislatures. The dialogue's going to change, and the direction is moving more positively toward labor.
Is this strictly a partisan issue, these labor laws?
I think fundamentally, yes. There are a few issues that are as divisive between the parties as labor issues, and you can really tell the difference. That's partly because both parties are so polarized right now. You have one that has moved to the left, the Democratic Party, and the Republican Party for quite some time has been moving to the right. There's very little moderate wing of the party, the Republican Party left, that used to be pro-labor, are willing to go along with labor on certain issues. That has vanished. And today you really have labor being one of the major wedge issues of our time.
These right-to-work laws, as supporters call them, I should say, have been one of the hot issues. Wisconsin was one of the most recent states, as you were mentioning, to get on board with this right-to-work legislation. First of all, talk us through what it does.
Well, right-to-work basically says that for those jurisdictions that are covered in right-to-work laws, for the most part, refer to the private sector under the National Labor Relations Act. In those situations, you can't negotiate the union or agency shop. You can't compel dues, basically, as a condition of continued employment. So when you negotiate a union shop, you have members that they don't join the union, but they're represented by the union. They have to pay union dues. That's fallen by the wayside with right to work. And many states, such as Wisconsin and Michigan, couple right to work as applied to the private sector to the public sector. But that is a moot point now because under the Janus Supreme Court decision, all the private sector is an open shop. You can't have any form of union security arrangement at federal, state, or local levels.
I'm sorry, all the public sector, right, under Janus?
Public sector, yes, under Janus. All the public sector now is an open shop.
And that in Wisconsin, we, in effect, led the way there, right? We had our Act 10 soon after Governor Walker came into office that took away a lot of labor protections and rights for public employees. There was a lot of protest at the time. Janus, in effect, made that irrelevant, right? That overrode that.
Yeah, Janus, you know, several states had taken action with respect to right to work, Wisconsin being one of them. Some applied it to both the public and private sector, like Wisconsin and Michigan. And what Janus did was basically say that at state and local governments, for those 22 states that allowed the union or agency shop for some state and local employees, that no longer was valid. It was unconstitutional. And so essentially, with the laws being as they are in the federal government and with the Janus case, you have no area of the public sector which is allowing union security agreements such as the agency shop.
What have been the arguments from supporters of right to work? What's the case they're making about why an individual worker shouldn't be required to pay union dues if they don't want to in a union shop?
The basic argument boils down to it's anti-democratic that you shouldn't compel people to pay dues against their will, particularly if the organization is using some of those dues for political purposes, and that secondarily, no other organization has such compulsory rights, or there are very few that have any such right outside of government, and therefore it's unfair to give unions this advantage. That's the basic argument in favor of right to work, which is a euphemism. There's no such thing as a right to work. It's really a right to not pay dues or have to pay dues if you're represented by an employee. The opposite side of the coin is that if you're represented by a union and the union incurs the costs of representing you and you get all the benefits of union representation, you should at least have to defray some of those costs. And that's what's done and had been done in the public sector with fair share agreements and in the private sector under union shop arrangements.
And you've written that since employers are able to impose a lot of conditions on employees, you don't see it as that unusual that a union that works, that organizes at an employer could add in these similar rules.
It's important to remember that the union doesn't unilaterally impose anything that would have to be agreed to by the parties. They would have to negotiate a union security agreement into a contract. And even prior to that, the union would have to be elected as a duly certified representative of the employees, and they can always be decertified. Or you could elect new leadership that didn't want the union security agreement as part of the contract. Many things could occur that could prevent the contract from taking effect, but it is a bilateral agreement between the employer and the employee and the employees represented by a union.
What has been the effect of these, again, I'll use the euphemism, right to work laws. What has the effect been on union membership around the country?
Well, let's look at your state, Wisconsin, which is different from the other states. In general, right to work discourages union membership, discourages union organizing activity to a significant extent. But in Wisconsin, where it was applied both to public and the private sector, although at different points in time, what we've seen since it has happened is a significant drop in both private sector union membership and also in public sector union membership. Since right to work took effect, before it took effect in Wisconsin, in the public sector where it was applied under Act 10, you had 175,000 union members in the public sector. Today, you only have 89,000. About 8 years ago, and this is considerably before, you had the right to work law applied to the private sector, but you had 354,000 union members in your state. You now have 218,000, and the number in the private sector, that 218,000, has dropped rather significantly in the past couple of years. So you might argue, based on at least that casual empirical evidence, that there's been a pretty negative impact. But Wisconsin in the public sector did some other things which were even more extreme. They disallowed the dues checkoff, and they required the automatic annual recertification of bargaining units in the public sector. Those things are tremendous hardships on unions and the people they represent and make it very difficult for those organizations to remain viable going concerns.
On a fundamental level, why do we have or need unions? Why should people be interested in the fate of unions for better or worse?
Because it's the only way people can collectively have a voice. I know it's very fashionable and popular to talk today about employers in the non-union sector that are more than willing to engage employees. Employee engagement is the mantra of the time. But really, that is a one-sided proposition. It's granted by the employer. It can be taken away by the employer. Union rights are something that are extended by law. And when you have a union protecting you, that union is an independent entity that can't be punished for representing you. And therefore, your collective voice has more weight and more protection under the law. And people can actually, I like to liken it this way. Under an employee engagement, if you decide as an employee you want to say no, you could be punished for it and there's nothing you could do about it. If a union decides in the course of negotiations to say no, you can't punish the employees for that. And really, it seems to me that an employee voice doesn't matter much if you can't say no, that you have to be willing to push your case and argue your case and differ with management without adverse consequences.
Politically, do you see the Democratic Party and leading Democrats making a particularly forceful argument in favor of tipping the balance back toward unions?
I think the Democratic Party is more aligned in that direction today than it has been in quite some time. I would say that for a long period of time, The Democratic Party was relatively mute about labor rights. They paid lip service, took it. They took the labor PAC money, and then when it came time to do anything, they really didn't do much. But now things are different. I think because you have a more active space in the Democratic Party, electing a lot of new people to office, particularly a lot of women to office, who are very concerned about workplace issues and equity in the workplace, I think you now see a clarion call for some change in the balance of the employment relationship, more in the direction of favor of the employees as represented by unions.
We'll leave it there for now. Merrick, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Merrick Masters is director of labor at Wayne State University, where he's a professor of business and adjunct professor of political science. He joins today to talk about Governor Evers' call to repeal right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin and how our relationship to labor has changed over the last decade or so in American politics. Right now, Judith Sears-Poisson joins me in the studio. It's Wisconsin Public Radio's spring membership drive. You count on the Ideas Network for interesting conversations. We count on you to help keep these discussions on the air.
And listener support is the largest piece of the funding that makes this show and all the others that you enjoy and count on possible. That's why your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Great news. We had a dollar-for-dollar match in effect this hour. We met that. We had a goal of 15 overall pledges this hour. We met that. We're doing great. We're getting off to a fantastic start on day one of this membership drive. Help us keep that that momentum going right now with your own gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
In that last segment, we learned about what changes to Wisconsin's labor laws Governor Evers is proposing, what the opposition to those initiatives is, and what the context is, looking at where these laws came from, what they mean, how they have affected unions, non-union labor, etc. These are the kinds of conversations you can count on from Central Time. Timely looks at current news and how it could affect you and your community.
Wisconsin Public Radio is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes these many topics you tune in for every day possible. Choose the amount that works for you and then make your gift.
And when you make that gift, you will be entered in a really exciting drawing. This membership drive, we have an exciting drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. In fact, there are five of them. So you have five chances to win. No contribution is necessary. You can see all the rules at WPR.org. Better yet, be automatically entered when you make a donation of any amount right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I spent money at a silent auction thinking I wouldn't win, and I did, and I won. Art, that was honestly a little creepy.
1976 MGB. That hasn't run in 20 years. I regret it, and I see it every day in my garage, and I regret it even more.
From creepy art to lemon cars, we've all made questionable decisions about how we spend our money. So it might be time to make a few smart ones. You can start by supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR. So make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your gift right now. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Judith Sears-Poisson. Listener support is the biggest source of funding for all the Ideas Network programs you count on, and that's why your support during this membership drive right now is so important. Make a gift of $5 or $10 or $20 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Think of all of the reasons that you tune into Wisconsin Public Radio, the Ideas Network, and Central Time. We provide you with a huge variety of topics, different perspectives from different guests, and from you, the listeners and callers who join the conversations. Think about what that's worth for you, and then make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you grew up listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Your parents listened to it all the time. Maybe you stumbled across us 3 months ago. Either way, you are still listening. Think about what keeps you coming back, what you appreciate about the Ideas Network. Then make a gift in support of that. Help it keep going. for your future listening and for the next person to stumble across us. Make that gift right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
There are so many wonderful things about living in Wisconsin. The people, the food, the landscapes, the sports teams, so much that makes living in Wisconsin great. WPR is one of those things. So if you've never given before, now is the time to do your part. It's never too late to make that first contribution of maybe $10 or $20 a month. It's easy. It doesn't take much time at all. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you pledge $10 a month or more, ask for the brand new Wisconsin Public Radio t-shirt. It's a new design on paper. I don't have an actual shirt here, but on paper, this one's looking pretty good.
I've seen pictures.
I'm going to pick up one of my own, I'm pretty sure.
Me too.
Before this is over, you can be one of the first to wear it with your pledge right now. $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's USA made, and it shows where you listen to WPR, in town, at home, in the great outdoors. It is printed right here in Wisconsin, and it's a great t-shirt. Better yet, it's a way to show your support at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We very seriously would not have Central Time. The Ideas Network would not be what it is without all the people who have given over the years. Join that legacy at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.